And welcome to Juno Afternoon. Today is Thursday, May 29th. My name is Shona Strausser, and we have a great show lined up with you for you today. We'll talk to Cancer Connections' Ruth Johnson about this Sunday's Survivor's Walk. Sarah McNeil Groves will be here to highlight the Juno Community Band's participation in the upcoming 4th of July parade. We'll get the details about Celebration 2014 with Sarah Dibdahl. And Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up, and this is her last week before she on Arts Up, before she takes a brief hiatus for the summer. And we'll talk to Nancy more about that. Writer's Almanac and more here on Juno Afternoon. But first, National Native News. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Canada, an apology has been made over what's being described as a racist fishing brochure. A lodge in Manitoba asked guests not to give Aboriginal guides alcohol, saying Native Americans have a basic intolerance to the substance. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
Many First Nations were outraged over the brochure from the Laurie River Lodge. The lodge's Facebook page was inundated with angry comments over one section of the 37-page brochure for people planning a trip to the facility. One paragraph warns guests not to give alcohol to Aboriginal guides. It read, "We take great care when hiring our staff. However, the subject of native guides must be touched upon. The Cree guides are wonderful people and fun to fish with. However, like all native North Americans, they have a basic intolerance for alcohol. Please do not give them alcohol under any circumstances." Arlen Dumas, the chief of the Matthias Colum First Nation, demanded an apology.
Not only are they using our resources, they're actually using our human resources as well, in order for them to achieve a livelihood, and then for them to be perpetuating ignorance and racism and discrimination is intolerable.
Other Native leaders were also outraged over the brochure, adding that no one in their right mind would make such comments. The owner of the lodge has apologized, calling it a total mistake, which should not have been in the brochure. He said it was an old guide that hadn't been used in more than a dozen years. It's not his opinion, and it's being removed from the brochure. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A nonprofit organization on the Pine Ridge Reservation was founded to care for man's best friend and help reduce the population of dogs wandering the area. Jim Kent visits with a group of women who are working to address problems.
Virginia Ravendahl founded the Lakota Animal Health Care Project in 2007 as a result of there being no veterinary services on the 2-million-acre Pine Ridge Reservation. The nonprofit, says Ravendahl, is like no other organization on any tribal land in the country.
What makes it unique is that it's a community-based effort to provide basic animal health care through the training and certification of tribal members who are certified to do distemper parvo vaccinations, mange, flea, tick, worm, all the basic animal health care.
And Ravendahl adds, all those dogs one might see roaming around aren't necessarily strays. Most are free-roaming pets who know exactly where their family lives and go home every night. But with estimates of dogs on the Pine Ridge Reservation as high as 25,000, Virginia Ravendahl says the program's spay-and-neuter clinics are vital. The group also partners with shelters in Colorado, Wyoming, and Minnesota to provide good homes for those dogs that are strays or can't be cared for by their families. Long before the horse was a part of the Lakota culture, the dog, or shunka, played a vital role in its community, especially in protecting the women and children of the village. Lakota Animal Health Care Project volunteer Connie Tenfingers says now it's time for the Lakota people to protect their dogs. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
An Oklahoma Indian hospital is scheduled to reopen. Medical services at the El Reno Indian Health Center were closed after a tornado. Damage occurred when the storm hit in May 2013. The Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes and the Indian Health Service have since worked to reopen the facility. A blessing and grand reopening are scheduled for Friday morning. Services at the clinic will begin Monday. In May 1996, President Bill Clinton issued an executive order involving sacred sites. It required federal agencies to accommodate access to sacred sites and allow Native American ceremonial use of the land. It also pledged to protect sacred areas. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Supported by Sacred Wind Community Connect, providing scholarships and internet training to the Navajo Nation and Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico. Sacred Wind believes broadband can reinforce Native cultures and offer means for self-determination. SacredWindCommunications.com. You're invited to Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation's second annual reception and fundraiser, Thursday, June 5th, at Sandia Resort and Casino in Albuquerque. Enjoy the art auction, meet Kiwanis board and staff, and help raise funds for Native Radio. Learn more at nativenews.net. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you're listening to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. Today is Thursday, May 29th. And in the studio with me, I have Alex Viteri and Ruth Johnson from Cancer Connection. Thank you for joining me. So you all have a lot of things coming up very soon. Before we kind of get to the details of events, I was wondering if you could tell us what the Cancer Connection is, actually.
Cancer Connection is an organization formed to support cancer patients throughout Southeast Alaska. It was started by a former swim coach from Juneau, Mike Miller, who himself was diagnosed with an inoperable, very advanced form of prostate cancer, and he flew out of town. He thought, wow, no one should have to fly out of here alone with so many unknowns. So Cancer Connection, our mission is called Giving Hope to Alaskans. We help with travel assistance. We have a cancer support group. We have one-on-one support for, we have people who've survived many different types of cancer. If you get a diagnosis, we can match you up with someone with a similar diagnosis who's walked that walk to be your friend through that journey. We have an apartment in Seattle, actually, for you to stay in if you're in Seattle for a prolonged length of time requiring treatment. And then we just host as many education events as we can every year to provide awareness for healthy lifestyles, prevention, the latest in treatment, and all things cancer.
So, Alex, you said you've been a board member since the beginning. How have you seen Cancer Connection grow or kind of make a difference in this community?
Well, it's been interesting. Mike Miller was a friend of mine, and he was diagnosed with cancer and sharing with me his experiences. And one day we were at the hangar and watching a basketball game. And he just came up with this bright idea. He said, you know what, Alex, I think we need to get some board members together and create a board that will help educate people and assist them in the unknowns of, okay, now I got cancer, what do I do in Juneau? Because it's pretty remote up here. And he asked me if I would be a board member, and I said yes, and other members are Ruth, and a host of us are still on the board. And we started initially with what we were able to do, and that was with air miles, because we didn't have any cash. And at that time, we were able to just ask people who travel a lot for their air miles. So if someone was diagnosed with cancer and they had to fly down to Seattle, we could use that donation of air miles to help assist them to fly down to Seattle and come back home. That program is still underway. We're doing quite well with it. We have to finance it individually now from donations, but because the air mile program capability is gone now, different rules have disabled that approach. But all in all, it's the Cancer Connection has grown significantly. We now have a full-time assistant on board. We have an office. Before, we were working out of the back of our pickup trucks or closets, and you know, when it came time to go to a donation or something like that, we would have to find out where we left the box last time for all of our displays. But now we're very well organized and up to speed, I think is the right word to use.
That's great. And so you have some events coming up here.
Yes.
And so you're a nonprofit, so these events, are they both for raise awareness as well as making sure you're raising funds to support the kind of work that's happening at Cancer Connection?
Well, the event that we have this weekend is primarily a celebration event. It's a nationwide event called National Cancer Survivors Day. And the Juno Community Event is sponsored by Cancer Connection with help from Wells Fargo, who buys lunch for us at the Baranoff. And our event starts at 11 o'clock at Centennial Hall, where cancer survivors gather and walk together in celebration of life through downtown up to the Capitol steps for an annual group photo there. And then we meet at the Treadwell Room at the Baranoff and have lunch. And it's our opportunity to recognize individuals in the cancer community who've made contributions to the community, to Cancer Connection, to, you know, in various ways, made their mark with the cancer community. I guess Alex can tell you who those individuals are that we're honoring this year.
Yeah. This year I have the honor of presenting the Survivor of the Year Award to Mark Mickelson. Mark is a cancer survivor, and I think this is his fifth year. He's doing quite well and quite a character, too. It'll be fun making that presentation. We also are making a presentation to Dr. Carol Brown for Medical Professional of the Year. We're very happy. She's outstanding. Can't say enough good things about her. The Volunteer of the Year this year is Sarah Peacock. Sarah's helped us in a number of different ways to enable the Cancer Connection to maintain itself and grow throughout her efforts during the year. And then the Corporate Partner of the Year is NAO, that's right.
Nugget Alaska Outfitters.
Nugget Alaska. Ron Flint, forgive me, Ron.
Yeah.
They changed their name, and I'm still stumbling over a little bit, but it's a great store. So that's who we're making the presentations to. I would like to add a couple of things here, and that is that everyone is invited to attend. We accept donations while we're there, but there's no necessary donation. If you're a cancer survivor or you want to get somebody in your family is, you want to be more familiar with what the cancer scene is like and maybe bump into somebody who's gone down that walk, this is a really good opportunity to do that, and I encourage everyone to attend. The other thing is that all board members are all voluntary. None of us get paid a salary. We do this all on our own time or free time, and sometimes take leave to do it. And it's just something that we intrinsically feel is an obligation that we have to help our community, and that's the spirit of Cancer Connection.
So you have another event that's coming up, actually kind of right on the heels of that one.
Yes, actually, the very next day, the National Cancer Survivors Day is Sunday at noon, and then the next evening, Cancer Treatment Centers for America, this is the second year that they have come up on a cruise ship, and it's some of the leadership of that organization that now has several clinics throughout the country, and I think they bring some of their patients, some of their staff, and in the communities that they visit, they do cancer awareness events. They tell a little bit of their story, but mostly they want to know, what do the people in your community want to hear about? So last year they did a wonderful talk on specifically nutrition. This year it's going to be a more general talk on how to maintain a healthy lifestyle, a cancer prevention kind of lifestyle. And that will be at the Centennial Hall Convention Center at Ballroom 2 from 5:30 to 7:30. And, again, another free meal. A buffet dinner will be served.
So Cancer Connection is also, so it's for cancer survivors, but is it also a resource for, you know, friends and family of who are trying to, you know, assist a person who is going through that process? Are there resources for that with Cancer Connection as well?
Absolutely. As Alex said, we do have office staff most mornings in our office now. And when someone's not actually in our office, our phone number forwards to a cell phone that is always with a board member. It's not always answered immediately, but we should get a return call within several hours, if at the latest the next day. And we have all kinds of support for people who have been through this journey. I'm one of the only members of our board who's not actually a cancer survivor. There's a couple of us. But if we can't answer your questions and find support for you, we will find someone who can. That's why our name is Cancer Connection. We're all about connecting people to the resources that they need in our community.
Is there a website where people can get more information?
Yeah, and I encourage everyone to go there. The website is cancerconnectionak.org. So it's cancerconnectionak.org.
Great. And so if people want to participate in the walk, do they need to register first? Can they show up on the day of? How does that work?
You can just show up at Centennial Hall for the walk at 11 o'clock. We do ask for an RSVP for lunch, so we have an idea of numbers. And that number is 796-2273. And that's that number. I was saying, well, either go to our office and be answered by Jody or Shannon in the mornings, or you'll catch a board member after that.
Well, Alex and Ruth with Cancer Connection, thank you so much for coming on air to talk about this very important resource in our community.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Well, come on in, sit down, she said. Have you ever seen this bed? Well, no, it's really strange. It looks like a space-age dream. But don't be scared, it won't take long, and we can play our favorite songs. Just relax and close your eyes. It sounded like a machine gun, and it wasn't even close to fun. Had my arms above my head like they arrested me. And now it's time to take some more. Doctors need more to explore. Come this way inside my room. And they shot me, made me nuclear. They told me you would make me glow. Yes, they proudly radiated me, cause they wanna see right through my bones.
And you're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, May 29th. My name is Shona Strasser. And in the studio with me, I have Sarah McNeil Groves here to talk to us about the upcoming Juno Community Band's 4th of July Parade. Hi, Sarah.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good to be here.
Morning, afternoon.
We have a really exciting thing coming up soon. As you all know, Juno loves to celebrate the 4th of July. And
it's pretty hardcore in this town.
It is. And at the community band, we like to participate in it with the marching band. And rehearsals are going to be starting up this coming Monday evening. And we're looking for people who want to play and participate with us.
So that actually starts this Monday.
Right, June 2nd.
So where do people go and what should they bring?
Well, bring yourself, bring your instrument and a music stand. And we meet at Faith Lutheran Church, which is out in the valley on Sunset Drive. And 7 o'clock, 7 to 9, anybody junior high age and older is welcome to come. You don't have to know how to march. We just kind of get in line and walk. If you can walk and play at the same time, you can come.
So how many people are usually in the Juno Community Marching Band?
Well, it varies from year to year depending upon who's available. We've had anywhere from probably 25 to 45 people. So we'd like to aim for about 30, 35 if we can get that many.
Are there some spots that are kind of the coveted spot every year that people say, I want to do this?
Well, if you like to march in the front row, trombones frequently get the front row if we have enough to do that. Sometimes the clarinet players vie for the front row if we can fill up a full rank. Tubas are great. Sousaphones are great to give that nice low part in the band. So really anything is welcome.
How do you all choose your music? Who does that?
Amy Bibb is going to be our conductor.
Oh, awesome.
This year. Yeah. And she chooses the music. We frequently do, I'll say, good junior high level music so that it's accessible to everybody who comes. And we only have 4 rehearsals, so we don't have a lot of rehearsal time. We play marches, you know, the typical Stars and Stripes and Washington and Post are 2 of our main parade marches. And we usually rotate that with a third march, sometimes them basses or whatever suits our fancy as the third march. The other pieces of music, we do have 2 sit-down concerts, usually the week before the 4th. And this week, this year, we're going to be doing the Food Truck Fridays on July 3rd. So come out at 6 o'clock to hear us then. And we'll probably be doing one down in Marine Park probably Sunday afternoon about 3 o'clock, if it's at June 29th or something, the Sunday before the 3rd.
Got it.
And we play sort of light music. Sometimes we do Disney tunes. Last year we had a new piece of music, The Cowboys, from the movie, which is fun, and I think we're going to repeat that this year. So just a wide variety of music.
Sounds like a really great time.
It is. We have a lot of fun. I hope everybody comes out and joins us. And if you don't play, we'd love to have you come to our sit-down concerts.
And so you all do both. I've seen you in both spots. So you start downtown and you do the July 4th walk there. How many of you actually make it over to Douglas?
We do both the Juno and the Douglas parade. Usually everybody comes to both parades. So sometimes we have a few less in Douglas, but usually everybody comes.
Yeah, Douglas is kind of one of those things. I actually skip the downtown and I hit Douglas.
Yeah, Douglas is perfect for three marches. We play all three with a very small amount of cadence in between. So if you want to hear all three marches, and be sure to have the band playing in front of you when you're watching, Douglas is the place to come.
That's great. Is there, so people can just show up? They don't need to sign up or
anything? Just show up. You don't have to sign up. If you are interested in more information, you can contact us on our website or via email, which is junocommunityband@gmail.com. But just show up Monday night, 7 o'clock, Faith Lutheran Church.
Perfect. You've got about a month of rehearsal, and then you're marching away.
That's correct.
Sarah, thank you so much for coming on to tell us about this. It's just so much fun to watch everybody perform and march.
It is. We really have a lot of fun, and I would encourage, if you know somebody who plays, high school, returning college student, encourage them to come join us.
That's right. The more the merrier, I
assume. It's a blast.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I am a storyteller. My life is a story. My history, my culture, my actions are all part of my story. You are a storyteller too. If you or someone you love is a victim of violence or is acting violently, we can change your story. We can stop the violence. Asking for help changes everything. Call your local shelter or free 24-hour crisis line. We all Alaskans choose respect.
Brought to you by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Support comes from Annie Kales, presenting John Ferringer's 30th anniversary show with an opening reception Friday, June 6th at 4:30, featuring new work, originals, and sold-out prints. More details at anniekales.com and on Facebook.
I'm Michael, a Tlingit and a native of Alaska. Some people in my tribe call me a ghost walker. That's because smoking gave me COPD. That's a disease that makes it harder and harder to breathe, and you can die. My COPD is so bad, my doctor gave me 5 years to live, if I'm lucky. My tip for you is to quit smoking now and live your life as a person, not as a walking ghost.
You can quit. We can help. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
And you're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, May 29th, KTOO. Here is Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
The Writer's Almanac for Thursday, it's the 29th of May, 2014. It's the anniversary of the famous world premiere of Stravinsky's Le Sacre du Printemps at the Théâtre des Champs-Élysées in Paris in 1913, a ballet about a young girl chosen as a sacrificial offering to spring who dances herself to death. May 29, 1913, wealthy people in the audience expecting beautiful music and choreography, and a large bohemian element hoping for something bold and new. The curtain rose on dancers dressed in heavy drape-like fabric. They were stomping around the stage. The audience began to laugh. The choreographer Nijinsky had to shout his directions to the dancers because the audience was yelling so loud. The music was dissonant and jarring. There was no melody that they could hear. There were catcalls and hisses. Patrons got into fistfights. 40 people were thrown out. Some people in the audience threw vegetables at the orchestra, which kept on playing. And within days, Stravinsky was the most famous composer in the world. The Rite of Spring, now considered a great masterpiece of 20th century music. It was on this day, 1914, Edgar Lee Masters published the first poem of what would become the Spoon River Anthology. He was a lawyer. He lived in Chicago. He was writing short poems about people he had known in his hometown of Lewiston, Illinois, and they never forgave him for it. But it became one of the best-selling books of poetry in American history. It's the birthday of the writer known as Max Brand, born Frederick Faust in Seattle, 1892. Best known for his novel Destry Rides Again, later made into a movie starring Marlene Dietrich and James Stewart. During the Depression, he was one of the highest-paid pulp fiction writers in America. He finished a full-length novel every week, earned about $100,000 a year at the time. When World War II began, he got himself posted as a correspondent for Harper's Magazine. He was sent to the front lines, died of a shrapnel wound in Italy among soldiers who had grown up reading his stories. And it's the birthday of the philosopher Oswald Spengler, Blankenberg, Germany, 1880, who said, "Each culture has its own new possibilities of self-expression, which arise, ripen, decay, and never return." He put the theory forward in his book, The Decline of the West, in 1918, in which he said he believed that Western civilization had already experienced its creative flowering and that it had at most 200 more years to go before it died. Here's a poem for today by Wendell Berry entitled The Want of Peace. All goes back to the earth, and so I do not desire pride of excess or power, but the contentments made by men who have had little, the fisherman's silence receiving the river's grace, the gardener's musing on rose. I lack the peace of simple things. I am never holy in place. I find no peace or grace. We sell the world to buy fire, our way lighted by burning men, and that has bent my mind and made me think of darkness and wish for the dumb life of roots. The Want of Peace by Wendell Berry, from his new collected poems, published by Counterpoint Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And you're listening to Juno Afternoon. Today is Thursday, May 29th. My name is Shona Strasser. Thanks for tuning in today. And in the studio with me, I have Lee Katinger. Yes. And Sarah Dibdahl here with Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having us.
Sure. So you all have just lots of really huge things going on these days, it seems like. And starting, coming up right around the corner here is Celebration.
Yeah. It's just about 14 days out, so.
Wow. So Celebration is just one of, you know, I feel like one of Juneau's biggest, most amazing events that happens every 2 years. I was wondering if you could kind of give us the history of Celebration, when it started and how it started and why.
Okay, thanks. Celebration, it's a biannual event that Sea Alaska Heritage Institute sponsors every even year. So this year we're having Celebration June 11th through the 14th at Centennial Hall will be where most of our activities take place. Back in 1980, Celebration was conceived based on our elders wanting to ensure that our culture and our language continued and was preserved for our future generations. And I think in the original Celebration, there were a couple hundred people that gathered here in Juneau, and over the years, it's grown into such a wonderful, immense gathering that we get about 5,000 to 6,000 people in Juneau during those few days. So
wow,
yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
So what are some of the there's a beautiful grand parade or the entry into mm-hmm. the Centennial Hall. Could you talk about some of the major events that happen?
Yeah. So a change that is going to take place this celebration is normally we started our grand entrance on Thursday to kind of lift the burden off of staff and also participants having everything crammed into 3 days. We opted to have grand entrance Wednesday evening. So June 11th, Wednesday evening, grand entrance will start at 6 p.m. All the dancers line up down by the Andrew Hope Building, and the procession will start at 6 p.m., and all the dancers will work their way down Willoughby into Centennial Hall. And it's just amazing to see. We have over 50 dance groups participating, and just to see the regalia and the pride and, you know, all ages, you know, just to babies to our elders participating, it really lifts, you know, everyone's spirits.
What area are people coming from all over Alaska? Is it mostly Southeast and Canada, or how does that work?
So probably the majority of our groups are from Southeast Alaska, but we do have, you know, relatives from the interior that join us. We probably have 4 to 5 groups from the interior. We also have relatives and dance groups up in the Anchorage area that join, and probably 3 to 4 dance groups with roots in Southeast Alaska and the Washington area that travel. To be here.
After the grand entrance, what do people participate in, and what's the what is Celebration like after that?
So after the grand entrance, Thursday and Friday are at the Elizabeth Pradovich Hall, and Centennial Hall is where the performances take place, starting at 8 a.m. Going until 9 p.m. You know, and each dance group performs for 30 minutes. Beyond the performances, though, as Celebration has grown into so much more, we have the artist market, which will take place down at the Sea Alaska Plaza, where we have, up to 30 artists selling their work. We have the juried art show, where artists are able to submit their work and it be on display at the Jack. The award ceremony for the juried art show will be Wednesday afternoon, and then after that, it's open to the public for people to go and view the different pieces that have been submitted by just, you know, such talented artists. So
I've just seen some of the most beautiful work in my whole life at Celebration. It's just amazing.
It's pretty amazing, the time that's put into the art and the regalia.
What are some of the, are there other things? I remember one year or one celebration, there was lots of really good food. There were, I can't remember exactly what it was, but there was, I think maybe even kind of an art, that was kind of juried too. I can't remember.
We have two food contests. We have the soapberry contest and we have the seaweed contest. And for the times and locations of when those would be, I would encourage people to check out our website or our Facebook page and just watch for posts. And so people throughout the region submit seaweed to be tested. And it's pretty fun to see the different varieties that come in and ingredients. But an event that's going to be new to Celebration that's exciting is we're partnering with the Juno Library. And on Friday, we are going to have a reading session with for the younger children at 11 a.m. at the downtown library. And we have two authors who have written books around Southeast Alaska and our culture and history that will be doing reading sessions with the kids. And it should be really exciting to have that event and for the kids to see books and literature, you know, about our region and our people.
How does ticketing work for Celebration?
So ticketing for Celebration, you can buy a 3-day pass. Well, now it's a 4-day pass for $30 for adults. And you can buy day passes as well. And we're doing pre-ticketing sales now. And you can contact Stephanie at our office. And her number is 463-4844. Or you can come Wednesday down to Centennial Hall, where we'll also be doing pre-ticket sales throughout the day.
So you can get tickets at the door,
yeah,
too,
essentially. And you can get tickets at the door.
Okay. Yeah. And is there a list of events, or is there a full kind of schedule that people could find online? Or
the schedule hasn't been submitted yet. You know, we're just trying to tie things down. But it will be in our program. We're actually getting ready to send our program to print here, hopefully tomorrow, and encourage people to pick up a program to see, you know, just a variety of events that will take place.
Is there a way for somebody who, you know, say they want to volunteer or just get involved, is there a way that they could do that? Do you still need volunteers?
Oh, yes. You know, we really want to encourage, you know, the Juno community to come out and participate, whether it's as a spectator, as a volunteer. Michael Hoyt is our volunteer coordinator for Celebration, and he can be reached at 907-586-9166. And, you know, it really is a community event, and we just hope that people feel, you know, like they could come down and volunteer a few hours and participate.
I did see online that you could also kind of volunteer or sign up online to volunteer too. So what's the website that people can kind of check that out?
Our website is www.cealaskaheritage.org.
Great. So, Lee, you also have some other, there's just lots of things going on at Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. And this one in particular is a big, beautiful new building downtown. It's the Sobolev Center. I was wondering if you could tell Juno, I'm sure Junoites have seen it. I was wondering if you could kind of tell us on the update on it and how's it going down there?
Sure. Well, as everybody has seen it transform from last August when we had the groundbreaking on August 1st until now, when the beautiful yellow cedar siding has gone up, the glass is in. The exterior, for the most part, is fairly complete. We'll be putting canopies on a little bit later in the summer. That's a couple of months out yet. Obviously, the artwork has yet to go on, and now the interior is really finishing out. So we're starting sheetrocking and finishing up all electrical and mechanical, plumbing, all that type of stuff, and we'll be moving into finishes. So we're really excited. We're on schedule and for the most part on budget as well. So really excited. We have some wonderful art that'll be displayed in there. It's really going to be just a magnificent community facility that I think we'll all be able to be proud of. And it's something that's really going to be a key landmark in downtown Juneau. So it's really a truly unique transformation from 3 years ago, when 4 years ago when it was a pit, until where it is today. So it's just interesting to see the power of change when a community comes together to make a project like this happen. And it shows what can happen out of a dream what can happen out of a little inspiration and motivation to make something like this happen. So we'll really have an asset that is going to benefit our community. It's going to benefit every family and children for years to come.
Are there still fundraising efforts to be going, you know, to go around the building? I imagine it's got to be a huge kind of just increase in operations and all sorts of things.
There are, and they'll continue to be, whether it be construction or programmatically. So it's something that if the community is interested in donating to the project, we still very much are looking for donations for the Walt. Completing the construction of the Walter Soboloff Center, but also programmatically, if maybe you're not interested in donating for construction, we're going to be really ramping up our art programs, our education programs with the opening of the center, and can very much use programmatic funding as well to develop and hold those types of programs. So there's a lot of opportunities out there, and they can contact the Alaska Heritage Institute directly and ask to speak with development staff about those various giving opportunities. And they can also go to our website, sealaskaheritage.org, or the other website we have is sealaskaheritagecenter.com, and they are able to give directly through the website online if they'd like to do that as well. So.
It must be really exciting and a little bit daunting to have a really brand new, huge facility that's, you know, that is going to be actually, you're right, a landmark for our downtown, definitely. And I was wondering, speaking of programs, what kinds of things are you all kind of working on? I imagine it's a big scope, but what kind of things are you talking about? You said it may be increasing your education programs, and what's kind of been the buzz?
Sure, and I think, I mean, those programs are still growing, too. Let's take our art programs, I think, and I'll take that and extrapolate it out briefly. So we have art programs. We have form line design classes that we teach throughout Southeast Alaska, youth as well as adults. We have weaving classes, carving classes, skin sewing classes, all these types of programmatic activities that are going to be able to continue and grow, all held in one location for the most part. We have integrated technology, video conferencing in the room. So if we are doing a class, we have the ability to video conference that out via the web, and anybody wherever they are can tune in, follow along. That's the same language classes, those type of things. But again, as we go back to art, so we have the art education classes. We have a retail space that will allow individuals that have taken those classes to be able to sell their items, kind of like a kind of an artist cooperative space,
cool,
almost,
yeah.
If you will. And really, the goal of that space is to continue to provide those types of educational programs. It's not a business space. It's more of a continuing education and program space. But on the other side of it, we have an artist in residence program that allow artists to have 9 or 12 month residency programs where they'll have a space, they'll have more or less an office of their own, workshop, ventilation, that type of thing, to be able to work in there. But more importantly, they'll have access to our collections. So an individual can go look at a basket from 200 years ago and come back up and use that for inspiration in a current work that they're working on, or be able to access other parts of our collection to inspire what they're doing today, whether it be traditional or maybe a contemporary influenced concept or medium. So I really see a lot of potential in that, and it really brings our art programs full circle. And so I think that's just a touch of just one programmatic area and how it brings it all into one space. And again, the goal of the Walter Soboloff Center is to bring it all in one house. So everybody knows that's where I go. I go to the Walter Soboloff Center for these programs, whereas in the past we've had it in classrooms here, open space there. We really want to have one house, one center that the community and families go to for these activities. Storytelling is another thing that we're really looking forward to with a traditional clan house feel. We see it having a real inspirational feeling, having that storytelling going on in there, as well as performances. It'll be the only traditional type clan house in Juneau. So it'll offer a unique culturally immersed setting for those types of programmatic events that I think is hard to even envision what that feeling is going to be like right now. And can't wait for the grand opening to really be able to experience that.
When is the grand opening, do you think, forecastingly?
It'll be spring of 2015.
Wow.
We haven't nailed down an exact date yet, but hopefully a sunny day in the spring of 2015.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like just a really exciting time at the Alaska Heritage Institute right now, with celebration coming up and the Sobolev Center opening soon. Sarah, is there something else that you would like to tell us about celebration?
Yeah, you know, two things that I you know, left out in mentioning that we'll be having is that every celebration we schedule a time for lectures. Again, I encourage people to, you know, check out our website and watch our Facebook page for lectures. But just to mention a few, we'll have Richard and Nora Dowenhauer that will be, you know, speaking about documenting Tlingit Raven stories on Thursday at the Gold Belt Chilkat Room from 3 p.m. You know, we have Dr. Thomas Thornton that will be here giving a lecture, as well as the newly elected president of TNH, Richard Peterson. He'll be speaking to the efforts of the Well House restoration. And so, you know, people that are interested in coming out and hearing some lectures and from people throughout the region, you know, we encourage that. And one last thing that is not new, but I don't know that many people are aware of, is that we've partnered with the Goldtown Nickelodeon. They'll be viewing a few shows as well during celebration, and I would encourage people to check out their schedule and see the different viewings that they'll have during those days.
Sounds like there's so many ways to either participate or just so many ways to get involved in celebration this year. Yeah. Sarah and Lee, thank you so much from the Alaska Heritage Institute. Two fabulous things right here on the horizon. A celebration coming up in just 2 weeks, and you can get your tickets by calling the Alaska, and also the Sobolev Center opening up and very soon, actually. That's just around the corner. Thanks for joining me in the studio.
Thank you for having us.
And you're listening to Juno Afternoon, Thursday, May 29th. That was the Beatles, a song called If I Needed Someone. And that was actually, it was chosen for a very specific reason, because what is the Jack going to do if they need someone?
They're going to call somebody.
This is,
who are you going to call? Hey, we got a list.
Yeah. This is Nancy DeJourney here with Arts Up.
Hey.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Hey, it's the last day of school, Shona.
It is. And you only have like one more day, right?
I have two days.
2 days?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a minute because it makes me a little weepy. All right, what's going on for this next week?
There's a Dennis Egan campaign kickoff at 5 o'clock down at the IBEW Hall.
Tonight? Oh, wow.
Yeah, karaoke night at McGivney's. Goldtown's showing Damnation, a documentary adventure thing. It's only $5, and that's running through the weekend. There's open mic at the Alaskan Bar. So Friday is final Friday jewelry trunk show from 10 a.m. to 6. Colleen and Hannah Goldrich, Annie Gales.
Really?
Really.
That's a score. I know. I was like,
We better get us down there. And also on Friday, Pucker Wilson's, the purple food truck right over there, it's having a grand opening. And I believe that he said something about free fries.
I've heard free fries.
Yes, free fry Friday. So his fries are pretty good. Let me just say.
They are actually fried, so.
Yes. There, and he cuts them himself and, you know, does them the old-fashioned way. So
nice.
It's also, let's see, there's a Mining 101 lecture with Mike Satry of Hecla Greens Creek at Centennial at 7 p.m. Scorchers at the Alaskan. Saturday, the Sitka Music Festival starts over in Sitka. Now, if you've never been over, they run their festival pretty much for the month of June, weekends, and it's worth taking the ferry over and taking in some of the music. Of course, Sitka's lovely, and the music that they have selected for this year is great. Just go online and check that out. At 8 a.m., there's a historic and cultural cruise to Angoon Killisanoo, leaving from Stater Harbor. And I think as of this morning when I checked, there were still 27 tickets left. It's a really nice cruise. It's a historical thing. They talk about the history of Angoon, and I don't remember what exactly they're doing on this one, but it usually is a really lovely, lovely time. So nice. Looks like it's going to be good weather, too. Seward Street Arts Festival. They're blocking off Seward Street and having a street fair.
I love that.
Yeah, 11 a.m. to 2, live music, street performers, arts and crafts outside of the canvas. So come on downtown and have a great time Saturday. 6 p.m., it's the Jensen Olson Arboretum annual wine tasting at the Glacier Gardens. There's tickets still available for that. Juno Roller Girls are having a riot. Centennial Hall.
A riot?
Yeah, Capitol Riot at Centennial Hall on Saturday night.
It's a doubleheader, I think.
I think it is
a doubleheader. They're playing Anchorage, and I think Fairbanks, too.
Maybe that's why they're calling it Capitol. We're the Capitol.
Oh, nice. I like that.
Yes. Okay, so Saturday night, you got yourself some stuff to do. Sunday, it is the National Cancer Survivors Day Celebration of Life Walk, which you mentioned that you've already talked about, but they're starting from the Jack instead of from Centennial Hall, by the way. So come on down, get your balloon and go for a walk and then have lunch. Comedy for a Cause at 4 p.m. It's a benefit for NAMI. That's at the Jack at 4 p.m. on Sunday. There are still some tickets available for that. And we have Music on the Fly out at the airport. 5 o'clock Charlie is performing in Baggage Claim.
Who's 5 o'clock Charlie?
You know, I know what he looks like, but I can't exactly remember the music that he plays. But he's a solo guy. So, you know, folk guitar type stuff.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And by the way, if people are interested in performing for Music on the Fly, it's different than concerts in the park. You actually get paid for the gig. So go online and look for some empty slots. We're going to run it all the way through September 30th. And then we do it through the wintertime. We try to pick Sundays where there's a lot of travel going on. So it's a nice time. Sunday Music at the Rookery, featuring 5 and 2 on Sunday night at 7. So there's that. Monday, all the weekly summer camps begin. Just when you thought it was safe and you're out of school, now your mom's going to send you to summer camp. But it's okay. You'll make some friends. All right.
I love the way that you're telling her. Great. It's going to be fine. Don't worry.
But there's a whole lot. I saw the list of things that they've got going on over at Zach Gordon. A whole bunch of really great stuff that they've got lined up all summer long. I think it's each week is a different sort of focus of things. The STEM folks are doing something out at the NOAA lab called Sun to Sea. It's for grades 7 to 9, and it's out at the Okbe lab. You have to apply online, so you can go onto our website and get that link and go get yourself registered for that. But there's the Canvas has a bunch of stuff. They're doing art, nature, and fun with Mary Vanderjack for this that week and the 2nd through the 6th, and that's for ages 9 to 17. Zach Gordon's stuff ages 8 to 13. I think we got the Fine Arts Camp coming up here. Anyway, at 6 p.m., 49 writers. They're going to be having a workshop, Perspectives and Viewpoints, with Deb Vanessa. And that's at the Jack on Monday night. Tuesday, there's a yoga intensive at 7:30 in the morning.
Mm. And this is why I don't do yoga.
I see you jumping up and down for that one. You're bending over backwards.
Bending over backwards. I am so not bending over backwards.
Okay, there you are.
I mean, yoga is great. I love yoga, but 7:30.
I love it. That's early in the morning. I have on here that, but I'm a cheerleader film screening in Woosh Poetry. But was that last week?
I
remember reading
that. Week.
I think
yeah.
so, too. We'll just take that right off there. We can only be a cheerleader so many times. Youth Concerto Competition is on Wednesday at 7 p.m. out at Thunder Mountain. There are 11 competitors. You get to hear the best of the best on this. It's free, and come on out. Robert Newman is one of the competitors, and just the whole lineup of folks. The winner of the competition will perform next year with the symphony. And the symphony is going to have, as you know, their new conductor candidate. So it's going to be exciting. Anyway, it's a lovely evening Wednesday night and free. So come on out for that. Broadway Song Editions. I'm sure that there's a Broadway song you'd like to sing. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's now we're talking.
Okay.
7 in the morning, no.
No, it's at 7 p.m. Yeah,
nice.
In the shower only. 76 trombones. Broadway Song Auditions for the Midsummer Concert, which will be held on July 9th. This is a lyric opera event that happens every year. Go to Holy Trinity, and you can be in the concert singing your opera song, Broadway song.
Oh, I had no idea they did Broadway songs.
Oh, yeah.
Where have I been?
I don't know, Shona.
Under a theater rock.
yes, under a rock. Okay, so, and also on Wednesday, it's the Old Time String Band Jam down at the Alaskan, and at 7:30, it's karaoke night at the Rendezvous, and I think we've made it all the way through the week. Isn't that exciting?
It is exciting. It's so exciting. Can we talk about you for a minute?
I don't sing.
No, really. Let's talk about you.
Oh.
Okay.
And then.
So, Ms. DeCherney.
Yes.
You have a lot going on here just for a couple days, and then do you have a lot of not going on?
Well, you know, you have to catch up on all the stuff that you didn't get done for the whole period of time that you were doing other things. So, I'm going to take a little break. I'll be back October 1st.
So people are calling it a sabbatical.
Mm-hmm. It's a Rasmussen Foundation sabbatical.
So what does that mean for you?
Well, it's not like education sabbaticals where you're supposed to go off and study something intensively or something like that. I think you're just supposed to sit home, you know, travel or go away. You know, they don't want me talking or thinking about the job or anything like that. Joan O'Keefe is the other person in town that got a sabbatical, and I think she's going far away. They suggest leaving town, but, you know, I have a family, so I don't want to do that too much. I think I'll be in the garden, but if we should bump into each other, we cannot speak of the Arts Council. We can speak of other things. Which will be good. Yeah.
So how's it going over there? I mean, are people just like, oh, my goodness, what are we going to do?
No, we have an excellent team lined up. You know, it was a little scary when Kari decided that she would take this fabulous job at Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, which we're really proud of her for doing and happy for them. And she's been very, very good about stepping up and saying, you know, if there's an emergency, give a call. I'll tell you where the plungers are. But we have a great team of people lined up. Annie Calkins is going to be sitting in for me for the month of June, And then Sandy Fortier, who used to be with Jazz and Classics, will be sitting in with me for July, August, and September. We've hired Susan Jabal, who used to be with the Juno Birth Center, and she will be sitting in Kari's seat working on the education program. So you'll probably work closely with her as a teaching artist. We've hired Ariel Rolfe, who used to be on our board as a student. She just got her master's in fine arts and museum exhibition and display. So she's also working with Sarah Asper-Smith, but part-time she's going to work with us and take care of individual artist opportunities, including the gallery and some professional development ideas that she has and a whole lot of stuff. Miranda McCarty has stepped in and just is just excited and has been already taking great steps. So we have a good, strong team. Rachel is there, and Catherine is there, and Kimberly is there. So I think it's going to be just fine. And it'll be an opportunity for us to try some, for them to try some stuff.
That's so cool.
That's cool.
Who will step in for Arts Up?
It will be Catherine.
I love Catherine when she comes in. Yeah. But I have to say, the Thursday Juno afternoon community, we'll miss you dearly.
Well, thank you.
And we'll see you again.
We'll see you in October.
And we won't talk of anything Jack-related.
No.
Okay.
No, simply straight stuff. I don't know, dogs and cats.
Dogs and cats.
Yeah.
I'll work on my dogs and cats.
Right. All right.
Thank you so much,
sure.
Nancy.
Thank you.
A great sabbatical.
Thank you.
And you're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, May 29th. My name is Shona Strasser, and this is KTOO Juno. We rebroadcast on transmitters K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. If you'd like to find out all that's going on in our community, you can check out the arts calendar at jahc.org, or you can check it out on ktoo.org and find all the latest news and going on in Juneau. Thanks so much and have a great day.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. The top leaders in the House from both parties say they are not joining those who are calling for the resignation of Veterans Affairs Secretary Eric Shinseki. NPR's Craig Windham says Shinseki's reportedly been reaching out to key Democratic leaders in an effort to